But after eating that for a few years, coming back to peanut butter, I was like, oh man, why'd I stop eating this? So I just
chunky or smooth?
It don't matter.
Don't matter.
Nah, man. So if I'm really hungry, chunky.
Okay.
But if I just need a little sweet something just to get me through,
quick pick me up.
A quick
smooth will do.
Smooth will do.
Smooth will do.
Just get it to be chunky.
Okay.
Chunky, peanut butter.
Okay.
We got some good one-liners coming out of this one.
Give it to me chunky.
Give it to me chunky and smooth will do.
Hey, everybody. Wanted to welcome you to a new podcast, Project Good Food. This podcast is about liberation. Liberation through food access, food sovereignty, and the relationship that we have with the environment. So let's start by meeting our hosts for this podcast.
So my name is Inya Cable Diane Moss, and I'm one of the founders here with Project New Village.
My name is Anthony Avalos, fourth generation San Diegan, second generation Southeastie Beastie, and a co-host here on Project Good Food. So, Ms. Moss, tell the good people, what should they expect to hear or learn from this podcast series?
That the people concerned with Project New Village are focused on Southeastern San Diego, or what we call the Greater Southeastern San Diego. Many of the stories and the references we hear are about the schools and institutions and assets that are here and how we're making them better.
To kick things off, we have a very special show today. We are going to go back to the very beginning, explain how it was that Project New Village came to be, some of the major components of the creation of Project New Village, and some of the foundational principles that continue to guide the work. Yeah, we have an exciting podcast today. We'll be discussing both the legacy of Brother Robert Tambuzi, as well as how that legacy intersects with Project New Village and continues to guide the work that it does up until today. We'll be joined by both Brother Kamal and Brother Eric. Me and Miss Moss will be handling hosting duties for this podcast. I hope you enjoy. This is our first go at it, but we definitely want you to hit that subscribe button, follow us on social media, and also come check us out at the Garden every third Saturday of the month. But until then, enjoy the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of Project Good Food, powered by Project New Village and the Good Food District. I'm Anthony Avalos, your host, and today I'm joined by the illustrious Miss Diane Moss, the supreme Eric Hansen, and the ever-changing and evolving Kamal Martin.
I love that. Yeah, ever-changing and evolving. Thank you. Received.
So first and foremost, thank you so much for joining us, y'all. I'd love to start out with some introductions, make sure the people know who you are. Miss Moss, tell the people who you are.
So my name is Yenya Kebu, Diane Moss, right? I'm one of the founders of Project New Village, and very proud to say a managing director for the day-to-day with Project New Village. Other than that, I actually live in southeastern San Diego, a resident here, and very proud of the things we're accomplishing at Project New Village.
Beautiful. Absolutely. Eric, please introduce yourself, sir.
Hello, everybody. My name is Eric Henson. I'm a native Southeast resident. Grew up about two blocks away from the Mount Hope Community Garden in Choya's View, and, you know, been family ever since.
That's right. Kamal, tell us who you are.
Yes. Ever changing and evolving. I love that. Longtime resident of the greater southeastern San Diego. I'm around the corner in Lemon Grove. I'm a father, two daughters. I'm a girl dad. I'm the eldest son. I've got four or three younger siblings. We're four. I have a love affair with plants of all kinds, the kinds that I could smell, the kinds that I could eat, the kinds that I plant to keep cats away from the flowers. I love art in many, many forms. I've been writing more and more, but I don't know that I'm a writer. And I've been having a question, you know, just because you do a thing, does that mean you can take on that label? If I cut your hair, does that make me a barber? I don't think that it does. So I'm not going to claim the artist title or the writer title. As I shared with you earlier, I like doing things and I'm a serial dabbler. Don't tell me what I can or can't do. I'm not afraid to fail in public. And I'm not afraid to learn in public real time.
Wow. That was a great introduction. I'll buy your book.
Hey,
you know, you just let me know when it's coming out.
We're pre-selling chapters today.
You guys,
$29.99,
and we'll give you the website right at the end of this podcast. Stay tuned.
Artpowerequity.com. You can find it there.
And we'll give it to you again.
Artpowerequity.com.
Just in case you forgot. So, now that the listeners have been introduced to who it is that's going to be blessing them today, Ms. Moss, would you mind taking us on a trip down memory lane to tell us exactly how Project New Village came to be?
Sure. I'm going to give you the short version because time considerations. Mm. We've been around since 1994, right? About 12 organizations pretty much led by African Americans got together because in southeastern San Diego, there were some concerns, particularly with young people, how long they were in systems. So we came into business, the 12 of us, 12 organizations. At the time, I was representing Children Having Children, but the county was there, Neighborhood House was there, others that were there, concerned about the conditions in southeastern San Diego. We were at first applied for a grant, right, as a collective, and we didn't get it. It was from the county. We thought, how dare they? So we raised Cain. They soon said, my bad. And we got the first grant so that we could bring children home and reunite them with their parents. That's how we got started. Fast forward to 2008. We began to look at food insecurity. Didn't see people doing things about that in our neighborhood. We asked a few questions. What are our relationships with food? And seemed like everyone at the time said, we used to have a farmer's market. We'd like to have one. We used to have a garden over where the Costco is. We'd like to have another. So the very first two things that we did as a nonprofit was to pursue a community garden and a farmer's market. And since then, we've been fighting and doing other kinds of things to create what we call the Good Food District.
The Good Food District is something that we definitely want to highlight. As we continue through this podcast series, you're going to be hearing more and more examples of how the Good Food District benefits those of us who live in southeastern San Diego. Now, it would be fair to say that Project New Village is one of the organizations leading the way towards food sovereignty and the ability for us to live healthier lives. I know that I've been caught up in this train, and I'd love to hear from both you, Eric, and Kamal as to how it was that Project New Village was introduced to you. What made you kind of buy into this idea of actually, no, we do deserve this, and we can get there through this vehicle?
Should I start that one off, Mr. Hanson? Okay, cool. I think I first came in contact with Project New Village and Miss Enyakevu Diane with no E Moss, 2010. I was working for the State Assembly as a staffer, doing some work around the Healthy Foods Financing Initiative. And I was tasked with just doing some reconnaissance into who is doing this type of food systems related work in San Diego and the larger community. So I started looking around. I was unfamiliar with the term food justice in that way at that time, but I did know about people like Fannie Lou Hamer and things like that, but in a different context. So then when I met Ms. Moss, and saw the stuff that they had going on, it was really like just on some work stuff first, where I was doing my job and kind of reporting back what was going on and what was happening. And the more time I began to spend, and mind you, at that time, I'm still relatively new-ish to San Diego. I think I got to San Diego in 2005. So now I've kind of reached a point where I've been in San Diego longer than I've been any place else in my life. But we'll get to that later. I loved being around an organization that felt like home and it felt like family, where Black people were themselves and very real. And you can't see me doing the air quotations, authentic. I hate hearing the word authentic now because it means something weird to me when I hear it. But it was just real and regular and natural. And I was able to be who I was instead of the work Kamal that I was given the job. And the ability to like do job work and then also participate in something that felt nourishing at a soul and a cellular level felt really special. And they were gracious enough to invite me into the space. And I know they was watching me, right? I know they was they still watching me like they're supposed to be. And it took on a life of its own from there.
Wow. Yeah. Sorry, Eric, you're going to have to follow that up, brother. But I know each story that comes into this space is a beautiful one. So please, how did you find Project New Village?
First, I want to say I'm glad Kamal mentioned that essence of feeling like a family. Because the first time I ever heard about Project New Village was the People's Produce Market itself. And it actually came up in a Black family class at San Diego City College. I want to say the professor's last name was Austin, but he told us about how, you know, vital it was to support a local farmer's market, you know, in greater Southeast San Diego. And I remember going to the market at one point with my mom and my brother. This is around 2010 as well. And I remember we stopped by, but didn't get to formally know Ms. Moss and Mr. Tambuzzi yet at that time. But my reintroduction again was actually through a friend of mine who was really involved with some food justice organizing. His name is Kareem Asaf. Mr. Malak, we met through a campus organization called Students for Economic Justice. It was, I want to say, Education for All. That's the name of the organization. And it actually had a group of farmers in that student organization. And he invited me to some event that Project New Village had. And I think it was called Exploring $2 million Enterprise in Southeast San Diego. And I was like, really? Let me go see what this is about. And it was based around some of the research of looking at the vacant lots for more, you know, community gardens. At that time, I was in the process of trying to transfer to UCSD. And I was in that room on Federal Boulevard, which, you know, this space right here is like probably twice that size now. So it's just wild to think about. But I remember seeing this, and this is tied to around the discussion of like community development kind of like being like revised. And my formal, like real, like introduction to Ms. Moss and Project New Village was, I was in my, I want to say like my senior year as a transfer student from City College at UCSD. And we all had to have some kind of internship. And I was actually making a commute out there, 24 miles, 2 hours by bus, 3 hours back home. And I'll be real, I was actually having some struggles. Wow. And I met a professor who was really big on food justice and that reconnecting people to their responsibilities in their neighborhood. And his name was Keith Pizzoli. He said, hey, I'm just being honest. I've been noticing you kind of having some, you know, struggles. Meet me at this garden site by Educational Cultural Complex, ECC. And I was like, all right. So I go out there, you know, in this lot full of mulch. And he asked me, what did I see? And I just said, I just see mulch. I don't see anything else, right?
I see what I'm looking at. And I'm looking at mulch.
Right, right. Yeah. And he tells me, well, think about it from a planning perspective. I was going to school there for urban studies and planning. And he was telling me about the amount of miles our food travels. And he said, what do you think a community garden would do? You know, in terms of like how we transport food, how do we source our food? How much reduction in like travel and how much more fresh the food would be. And that stuck with me. like ever since.
Did that spark something in your mind? Was that a seed literally planted in your mind that grew into the board member support that you are now for one of the larger nonprofit organizations?
Absolutely. And to know that Keith, the professor, was always bringing up the work that Ms. Moss and Mr. Tambuzzi was doing. And that kind of gave me a sense of pride, being out there, kind of isolated, you know, from, I'm just be honest, like regular San Diego. So when Kamal said this felt like an everyday thing, a regular part of society, that's what kept me grounded, because it's very easy to, you know, get locked into the ivory tower and not have that sense of purpose. Mm-hmm. And even hearing her story and Tambuzzi's story at UCSD and the stories about Third College and what that was supposed to be, like that had me hooked. Mm-hmm. And I had been volunteering ever since 2013.
So I've heard this name come up a few times in this discussion, and a whole lot more just in the community growing up. And that name is Robert Tambuzzi, who you mentioned. And so I would like to take a minute, one, to make sure that every viewer or every listener who is listening to this podcast has the opportunity to understand what a beautiful, I think the best way that I could put it is a beautiful contribution Robert Tambuzzi's life was, not just to his family, but to the entire San Diego community and beyond. But I want to hear, Ms. Moss, exactly how it was that Tambuzzi came into this work, or was it that Tambuzzi was the creator of this work?
So I wouldn't say that Tambuzzi was the creator of the work, but certainly one of the creators and contributed greatly to the foundation of Project New Village. So I met Tambuzzi as a student out at UCSD. I'm becoming an adult. I'm 18 years old. I meet him the first week I'm here. I'm from Los Angeles, right just up the way. But I get here, and here's this firebrand student. This is the first time I'm away from my home. I'm becoming an adult. And I run into Tambuzzi the very first week I'm in San Diego. He is also a student out at UCSD. I never embraced anyone that was such a firebrand as him. Anything that didn't sound right, he'd challenge it. Didn't matter when or where. It was always in a respectful way, but he always seemed to be on the right side of things. It always seemed to be, we didn't say equity in those days. We talked about justice, right, and liberation. So his conversation gave me courage to stand up for the things I needed to do. Tambuzzi was a big brother, mentor to me. I came to Project New Village in the early stages, representing a different organization. When we became a nonprofit, 2010, I asked Tambuzzi, would he be the first chair for the organization? And he accepted that challenge, and he remained the chair for about 10 years. And he is the chair emeritus for our organization. What he brings is his knowledge of history, his brand of community organizing, his knowledge, experience, I'm going to say, with Kawida philosophy and Dr. Maulana Karenga. And if that's new to anyone, just look up the Nguzo Saba or the cultural holiday Kwanzaa, right? Centerpieces of the philosophy in which Tambuzzi believed and shared with others. So it's through his tutelage and his lived experience that you'll see some of the documents, key documents that come out of Project New Village in terms of the formation of our value system and the practices that we have literally stand on the shoulders of Kawida, as we know that through Tambuzzi's giving us that information.
So what it sounds like is that you and Tambuzzi used that wisdom in order to create Project New Village and the values that it represents. Is that accurate?
It's accurate to me. It's even the latest value, the papers that you would see that we write now, mm-hmm. right, still stand on the shoulders of the Nguzo Saba. I gave you a paper the other day.
Yeah.
We put it out this year, but it talks about the lessons learned from Fannie Lou Hamer and the Freedom Farms, right? All of those are history kinds of things that if you're not open to history, you miss this. And people try to go ahead and do things in the future without being anchored in that which happened before. I think that's a bad move. So we try not to do that in most of what we do. It relies on history and those who are teaching and sharing our history. And I guess we have a lens and a value of what's our true history and not just some popular trending something, context in which we live, but truly our documented history.
That's right.
So do you feel that Tambuzi understood the purpose of creating garden spaces? And was that one of the reasons that as you moved into the Mount Hope Community Garden Space, that not only would you often see Tambuzi in these spaces, but that you moved in a way that others were not necessarily flocking to the idea because it wasn't the glamorous idea of the day, the glittery idea of the day?
So I'm going to say it was a battle for Tambuzi to see food as a justice issue. Tambuzi was for self-determination, and we have a problem with access to good food. Oh. So what's the strategy for that?
Right.
And part of the strategy that came from engaging the community is that we need a garden and we need to grow our own food. So that's how we get to growing our own food. But really, it's a value for self-determination and being solution-oriented. And Tambuzi championed that and shared that with others in terms of using it as a tool to get to another space to make life better. Fair.
So I loved how you explained how you came into contact with Tambuzi, that he helped form a lot of the ideas that still guide the principles today. I'm curious, as two individuals who came into the organization as it was already developing and as it was already developed, Kamal, you first, what was your first interaction impression with Tambuzi? And was it in the garden space, or was it in the realm of Project New Village, or was it just out in San Diego work that we often find ourselves in?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first time I met Mr. Tambuzi, it was not through Project New Village. It was through UAMIC, the United Ministerial Action African American Council. I'm butchering the acronym, but it was one of the many, many leadership positions that Mr. Tambuzi had held throughout San Diego in his illustrious career. And I was doing political stuff again as a staffer with the state assembly. And it was right around the way at the Jacobs Center. And it was like a turkey giveaway. Hmm. And I remember it being a relatively energetic and not yet orderly scene. People kind of doing, too many people doing their own thing. And I saw a skinny dude with some glasses wearing all black who just kind of strode into the middle of the crowd, and they just parted like the Red Sea. And he just started barking out orders in a way that was assertive and strident. And I was immediately enraptured. I couldn't take my eyes off it. Like, who is this dude? You know what I'm saying? And also the level of respect that he commanded almost effortlessly. And as soon as he kind of came with this energy that borderline could have went from assertive to something else, then he hit the crowd with a joke, hit a little two-step dance move. Everybody dispersed, did what they needed to do. And I was like, yo, what just happened? What just happened?
Is this a movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tambuzi just happened. You know what I'm saying? That's where I first met him, getting to see him in the wild. Hmm.
And so then what was it like meeting him as he's in community and then beginning to work with him as part of this Project New Village campaign project, so on?
For me, I think Mr. Tambuzi first struck me as a teacher and a guide and somebody who taught without being didactic necessarily. He didn't have to sit you down and like, we're going to learn a lesson. I believe one of his most powerful strategies for teaching was his example and the way he carried himself and the way he moved. And he oozed not just charisma and wisdom, but had one of the sharpest intellects I've ever had the pleasure to come across. And I made a deliberate effort to just watch him and to listen to him as much as I could. And for a while, I didn't even, I was honestly embarrassed to ask questions. I was like, I don't even know what to ask this dude. I don't want him to think I'm dumb. Right. So let me just shut my mouth and just soak up what I can. And that's how I feel like I spent my first few years around Mr. Tumble. He was just doing my best to speak when spoken to. I didn't want to be dull, as Mr. Tumblewizzy would say. I didn't want to be, I wanted to have, you know, a little bit of charisma and energy. But I also wanted to be clear about my understanding of where I was, that I'm still new to this space. I'm new to this community. I'm new to this organization. And let me just play my position. Every good leader has to first be a good follower. And one of the things that I understood even more clearly, spending time with Mr. Tumblewizzy and going back to what Ms. Moss had said about his not just belief, but practice as a cultural nationalist and a member of the US organization, the work of Maulana Karenga, Mr. Tumblewizzy was an ardent follower before he became a leader and followed one of the greatest Black leaders our country has had the joy of having. Mm-hmm. So being able to observe a living repository of Black history is a rare, rare and cherished experience.
It really is. And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that the reason why we're spending this time talking about Mr. Tumblewizzy is because of some of the things you just articulated. I think that was beautifully said. Eric, I know that I met Brother Tumblewizzy at the Garden, right? And while he knew my father, you know, he knew my family, I met him personally at Project New Village Garden. And the first time I met him, I was chastised. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I said something that, although it was meant as a term of endearment from me, it wasn't received as a term of endearment to him because of how nuanced his approach is to language. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I want to ask you not only, you know, what was some of your first memories, but can you think of a time when Brother Tumblewizzy, Mr. Tumblewizzy, really just wowed you with the way that he could articulate his point or an argument?
When I first met him. And when I first met him, it was in that office on Federal Boulevard. And it was kind of like, you know, opportunity for Project New Village, Ms. Moss and Mr. Tumblewizzy to fill me out in terms of what I was going to bring to the farmer's market, you know, in my capacity for, you know, what I was doing in school. And, you know, at the time, and I'm still stand by it because one of his favorite quotes, and I think it still sticks with me to this day. So this is me sharing that example, is a quote that he had from Frantz Fanon about how every generation's mission is to understand its purpose. Right. So when I first was kind of being interviewed or having a conversation with Ms. Moss and Mr. Tumblewizzy, at the time, I was coming from the space of, you know, I strongly identified with the hip hop generation. And I saw it as an opportunity to do community organizing through that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the organizations I was with at the time, it was called, actually it's well known in the early stages of hip hop, the Universal like Zulu Nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had a San Diego chapter.
Okay.
And at the time, you know, I told Mr. Tumblewizzy, this is where, you know, I'm coming from. This is the organization I'm with. And, you know, Brother Kamal brought this up already about his dedication to just being, you know, a person that is, you know, not only studious, but living and breathing that example of Pan-Africanism every day.
Okay.
So that got challenged.
Yeah.
The use of Zulu and that terminology and talking about Shaka Zulu, just, yeah. So, you know, he butchered me up,
right.
You know, with the etymology of words, you know, colonial history, obviously. Like, obviously there's parts I knew, but you know, he lives in, you know, breathes it every day. And I knew that despite, you know, being critiqued, that I still wanted to be in that space. I did want to prove myself to not only him and Miss Moss that you know, I'm part of this generation, and there is a purpose, and I was gonna do that by showing up every day at the farmer's market. And he didn't think I was from here at one point. He thought I was from La Jolla.
He didn't do that in this cove.
Yeah.
Oh man, come on. Yeah. Brother Tambuzzi, don't do that.
So it wasn't until I brought my mother and my brother to the People's Produce Market, and it was on a Saturday. It was a Saturday, I want to say morning. And they built my credibility. That's why I was glad that they showed, because both my mom and my brother are alumni of Lincoln High School, which he's an alumni of, right? And through that conversation, we learned that one of my great cousins, Alfredia English, she was a math teacher at Lincoln High School, and he told me that he actually, you know, had been mentored by her in community organizing as well. Wow. And that's something I didn't know much about when it came to my great cousin Frida. I knew that she was a brilliant, like, mathematician. She was a Hidden Figure, you know, before, you know, we learned about the movie. But he's like, yeah, you really are from here, man. And I was like, I've been telling you. But that was my introduction to him.
That's awesome. It makes me realize as I look through my experiences that I had coming into the Project New Village space, right, into the community garden, seeing the way that Miss Moss operated, the way she invited everybody in, and then the way in which those of us who were in moved with each other. And Kamal, you said something so interesting. You talked about it being a more real experience, something that resonated kind of with your soul. I had no intentions of working with an environmental justice organization, right? But I have to say that my time spent at the garden has become quite therapeutic. It was something that I realized that I myself needed, and I had to start understanding or analyzing why that was. And some of those elements are exactly what you described. So I'm curious, kind of saying that to say, there's a mission, or maybe several missions, that Project New Village is on. Ms. Moss, would you mind talking to us about what you feel is the primary mission that we are on right now as it pertains to the lessons that you learned and that you created with Brother Tambuzzi?
So again, I'm going to say center to that is self-determination and actually planning and being actively involved in problem solving and making this the best place that we can. I don't know if we mentioned that Tambuzzi wasn't born here, but raised in southeastern San Diego and raised his family here, so had a true commitment to this community. So when we look at community engagement, it's really, we need to be involved in making things better where we live. We need to build on the assets that currently exist. So we talk about gardens, well, they're spaces that lend themselves to being creative spaces where we can put gardens. We need more of that, and hopefully we are at the beginning of some kind of turn with urban agriculture. But our mission is to make this place better using the platform of food justice, food sovereignty. We know that eating good food is essential to having a good life and good health, and we want that where we live. I don't want to have to move somewhere else so that I can go to a good grocery store or have a good meal. So ours is to bring awareness that we have opportunities to actually be the fire to tell and the catalyst that we can change, bring the tools and the skills that we have, and then put some pathways together so that people can embrace what it is that we can do, and certainly to celebrate our victories because we're having some.
And speaking of victories, speaking of celebration, is there anything coming up in the near future for Project New Village that does represent a form of celebration? I hear there's talk of a healing fest.
We're in the month of August, right, 2024, and we will have our, I guess, third annual Healing Summer Fest at ECC on the 24th of this month. It'll be a blast. It was wonderful last year. We don't want to change much from last year. Just better, more people should show up.
All right. As we look to close out our inaugural podcast, I would love to hear some final thoughts. Kamal, would you like to start us off?
Yes, sir. One of the things that I recall you just saying, Brother Anthony, in relation to Mr. Tambuzi and him challenging or chastising you on the initial meeting is a very, very true Tambuzi-ism in that sense. And he pushed back against people he saw a promise in. He pushed back against people where he knew there was an opportunity for change. And if he didn't challenge you, that meant he really didn't give a shit about you. So
that's right.
That was another really interesting thing. And another element that attracted me to Project New Village then, Mr. Tambuzi, his commitment, Ms. Moss, and like the entire ethos of the organization was excellence, right? The best of African thought and practice in constant exchange with the rest of the world. And I saw that in real time with Mr. Tambuzi. I remember he would quote the autobiography of Malcolm X conspicuously, expeditiously, and with a level of detail that I had never seen, because he would be like on page 274. And I was like, nah, this dude is playing. So I had to go back and get my copy on page 274.
It was there?
Verbatim.
Wow.
Verbatim. So I said the level of intellect and his commitment to excellence, and he conveyed to me that it's okay to be brilliant. Don't dumb yourself down. Don't be dull and slow and lame just because people outside is dull and slow and lame. That's not who we are. That's not who we've ever been. And it's not who we'll ever be. So I think that was a tremendously powerful example about Mr. Tambuzi's influence on the work, the role that he played in shaping what PNV is today, and just the relationship that Moss and Tambuzi had as friends and colleagues and comrades to continue the work, and that it's transgenerational, right? We didn't start it, and it don't stop with us either.
Mm. That was beautifully said, brother. I know I'm not going to give you guys my final thoughts after that one.
So I met Tambuzi in the 70s and had the privilege of knowing him for decades. You know, he passed away or became an ancestor in 2022, right? Just June 16, 2022. But I met him in 76. I met him when he was young and just daring. I mean, just just firebranding, right? And we also saw him as he embraced cancer, which he succumbed to in 2022. And even then, a pillar of strength, coming out to the garden every week. He was doing interviews with the various media forms, right? And then he was talking about diabetes and other things that could happen and being better and more conscious of the impact of how we live our lives, what that has to do with our health. So he was a true soldier from the beginning to the end of his life. And we benefited from him being sharing time with us here on the planet.
Just wanted to let that breathe. I love that, Kamal, you mentioned that there was a brand that came with Brother Tambuzi, right? And that the Black community understood that brand so well. Like, even me being chastised, it was like, oh, that's right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I did too, y'all. Don't you know what I mean? I'm part of that group too. Don't you worry. But Eric, love to hear your final thoughts, brother.
Absolutely. So this conversation around being challenged and, you know, inviting debate, one thing you all may hear a lot about, regardless of what point of reference it is in communications, people often tell you to don't bring up the past, right? But what's so prolific about Mr. Tambuzi's approach and looking at the Nguso Saba and just, you know, West African lore in general, I think about Sankofa, right? The Balkan bird, and how we look to the past to move forward. And sometimes when I have conversations with folks, they talk about dwelling on the past a lot. Don't dwell on the past. But how do you rectify, you know, challenges moving forward if you don't? And one thing I remember him telling me, it was one day he was giving me a ride, you know, back home. He mentioned, you know, the challenge of growing up in, you know, generations where sometimes those social movements aren't popular to talk about, the resistance that comes with social movements and you know, he told me I was in the right place. And I felt like everything kind of crystallized from like all the classes I took, me being brought up at Valencia Park with Neomoja. It was a group for young African-American boys to learn the Nguzo Saba. And I think there was an Imani counterpart for young women as well. And all that came together. And I remember one day there was this debate just about, you know, where was I going to go in this space, like, you know, as I was getting older. And he said to me, we know it's going to be all right because of the Nguzo Saba. it has influenced my life a lot. It's made everything feel like family. And to know that that was the foundation for a lot of Project New Village's mission, it made me feel like I had a home, you know, even after moving away from Choice View. So those are my final thoughts on that. And I think about the Sankofa bird. You know, you do have to look to your past to move forward, regardless.
As you can see, y'all, we have some exceptionally powerful speakers on this podcast today. And so I just want to say thank you. Thank you to Kamal. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Ms. Moss, for your time, for your wisdom, and for sharing with us not only the brilliant work that is happening right now with Project New Village, but how some of that work came to be through the legacy of Brother Robert Tambuzi. Wow, what a podcast. So normally during this part of the podcast, and I say normally because this is the first time we've ever done it, and I'm going to call it normally now, we like to kind of take a moment to reflect. And so in our moment of reflection, I'd like to open it up by first saying that what struck me about this particular interview was the admiration that was palpable at the table. There is a deep-seated love and respect for Brother Tambuzi, and I could feel it throughout the whole interview. What are some of your thoughts, Ms. Moss?
I could feel it too. The thing that resonated to me both Kamal and Eric, and having been able to serve on the board with both of them and have some history with them, they both used the word felt like family, that it was home. When we look at that, we are a placemaking effort, and the place we're concerned about is this space called Greater Southeastern San Diego. For them to account for their relationship with Tambuzi and the things that happened, that resonated with me most, particularly during this, the month of August, Tambuzi's birthday month.
So, for those who are dying to know, what is Brother Tambuzi's official birth date?
He was born on August the 10th. According to what I know, he was born in 1953. So,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, August 10th. So, that is coming up. Possibly, if things go really well, you may be hearing this on Brother Tambuzi's birthday. And if so, just know that it is our mission to make sure that his name and his legacy is never forgotten. So with that, I will say that we very much appreciate you spending your time with us today. We very much hope to see you next episode. And until then,
good food revolution continues.
Until then, the good food revolution continues.